Maybe you've not heard of the monster content company that's Pocket Aces, but you've definitely watched their videos in the form of the monster YouTube channel / social media page, Filter Copy. The team behind Filter Copy is this conglomerate called Pocket Aces, and Pocket Aces was co-founded by three people, Anirudh Pandita and a couple that comprises of Ashwin Suresh and our guest on the podcast today, Aditi Srivastav. The three of them together have probably built out one of the most successful entrepreneurial journeys in the world of digital media. So much to learn from these brilliant people. But of the three of them, I got a chance to speak with the lady in the house, Aditi. Oh my God, what a conversation. Anyone who enters the field of content always wants to grow out extremely large. And I feel like if you want to do that, you have to study the people who've done it before you. That's what Aditi Srivastav gave to me on a personal level through this podcast. But I promise you, if you're an entrepreneur in general, there are learnings for you. If you're an ambitious person, there's learnings for you. And especially if you're a content creator, this could be a life-changing content piece. Enjoy this extremely deep, kind of long, but very, very value-adding episode of The Ranveer Show with Aditi Srivastav. And if you want highlights of this episode, subscribe to our third YouTube channel, The Ranveer Show Clips. Aditi Srivastav on The Ranveer Show. Today, we've got the co-founder of Pocket Aces, Aditi Srivastav. Ma'am, thank you for being on The Ranveer Show.
Don't call me ma'am, and thank you for having me. this has been a long time coming, so I'm excited to be here.
The whole Pocket Aces team is a team that I look up to a lot right from like day one. I remember like when I found out what y'all were doing in the content space, I found out that y'all were approaching things very entrepreneurially. I always felt like, yes, that is what should be done in the Indian YouTube space. So while I do wish to know the entire story, I want to kind of dial back a little bit because you've co-founded it with two other people, one of which happens to be your husband. Yeah. But even before that, I know you guys don't have a background in media or content. So where did this story start?
So this story started, I guess, while we were all in college. So look, we've all grown up as big, just like cinema buffs, like TV buffs, etc. So even in my family, it's a very nocturnal family, and we used to stay up late at night. Us time TV pe jo movies aati thi, antenna lagake, and we used to stay up all night, like watching those kind of movies, and never had a bedtime, etc. So I've always been huge fan of movies and huge fan of TV serials and shows, etc. Now, when we were all in college, Ashwin and Anirudh, we were all doing engineering, and my two co-founders, Ashwin and Anirudh, were in college together. And they took some like filmmaking classes, appreciation of cinema type of classes in college as well. But again, it was all for fun, to lower the pressure of the rest of the engineering classes that you have. And then when we all moved to New York to start working, Ashwin actually did a course in the New York Film Academy. So he actually did a direction course there, and he was volunteering to set up the Indian Film Festival that happens in New York every year. So I think that's where the roots of it started. When Ashwin and I got married and we moved to India, my path was more in development and social development, so very different. And he wanted to pursue films. So that's when he joined Reliance Entertainment, after that Jungly Pictures. And that's when, after a couple of years in the business, it was like, okay, now I know enough, I've developed enough of a network to set up something of my own. And the goal was always to create, content for the youth of the country. And that's how the idea of Pocket Aces came about. And then, Anirudh came on board, I came on board, and that's how basically we started.
So, the way Pocket Aces has grown, would you say that Filtercopy is still like the main baby? Or because I know y'all do a bunch of different things. There's Loco. There are, if the rumors are to be believed, there's like full-fledged films in the pipeline and all these things are also happening. So, I mean, how do y'all look at it and how did y'all look at it at the start? Because even when someone's trying to start a content-based company on YouTube, no 22, 23-year-old, no teenager will think as wide as you guys did. So I feel like there was definitely that element of your professional life prior to joining the world of content that came into play. But, you know, at that point when y'all were starting it, what was going on in your heads?
Yeah, 100%. See, you know, at the time of start, it was actually very different because, again, Ashwin had spent time in the movie business. So Pocket Aces was initially conceptualized as a film production studio going to make feature films. So actually for the first year of Pocket Aces, that's what we tried to do. And, you know, there were some very clear realizations. Number one, you know, it's these are high budget projects. So you have to be, you know, already kind of known in the space for somebody to kind of, you know, trust you with those monies. Secondly, there are many important moving parts that have to align together, right? So whether it's the, you know, whether it's the artists, you know, the director, the writers, the, you know, the actual cast. Now, directors and writers are easier to get to, right? The cast is actually the hardest if you're trying to go with, you know, big names. Then there's the studios, right? Then, you know, going forward, there are distributors, etc. So what we realized was that very little remains in your control, because it's too expensive to be able to finance anything yourself. And we became just like these people who were running between all these parties, trying to put together a project. And we definitely felt, you know, a lot of people in the media business spend years trying to get their first movie made. For us, that time was very important. And we definitely didn't want so much time to go by without something tangible to show for it, right, as an output. So that's when we thought that, okay, you know, this somehow business model is not suiting us, because, you know, even when after you make your first film, if it's a hit, great. It still takes you 1 year to make your second film. And if it's not, if it doesn't do well, then it takes like 2 years or 3 years to make your second film. So this doesn't look like something which would work where, you know, every single day you would feel so excited to be in this business, right? So for us, that's how it started. Now, the type of content was very clear. It was like, you know, we had been, because of growing up outside of India and spending so much time in the US, we had grown up exposed to all this like good international content. So we said that Youth of India deserves this quality content made specifically for them versus, you know, what's on TV, etc. And so the type of content was clear. The format of the movies to digital. And why digital? Because again, that realization dawned upon us that everybody is like watching on their phones actually, right? 70% of content consumption, and it's happening throughout the day, not just on Friday nights and not just on weekends, right? It's happening during commutes, it's happening when people wake up, when they're on the pot, in the middle of work, on their way back home, right before they go to bed. So that's when it dawned upon us that the format can be so different from this movie format we've been thinking about. And as soon as the format becomes short, the cost becomes really easy to absorb. And then as soon as the money is in your hands, the control is also in your hands. And so you can make as much content as you want. You can distribute it. And you can, if it doesn't work, that's fine. Next week, you can put out another piece of content. If it works, that's great. And you can still do that. So I think the training of our previous roles in finance, the way that came into use was because we then, after this realization of digital dawned upon us, we researched the heck out of what was happening in other parts of the world in the space as well. And at that time, BuzzFeed was something that was, you know, growing really, really fast. And a lot of our early lessons have been from that, about how they set up their short video channel, how they used Facebook and YouTube at that time to actually grow organic distribution. You don't have to buy views, how to increase engagement. So we learned a lot of our lessons using research, and trial and error and experimentation of, you know, then of the content that we were putting out. So it was a very systematic approach once we decided to go digital. And I think that's where it was different from what a lot of people do. It was well researched, and it was like, first we'll try this, if it doesn't work, then we'll try this. Facebook ke liye aisa algorithm kaam karta hai, share button bahut important hai, YouTube ke liye search bahut important hai. So in the initial days, we actually sided much more towards Facebook, because, you know, if nobody knows you, how will they search for your content? Right, but on Facebook, if you pop up on people's timelines and they share, you pop up on their friends' timelines as well. So it's much less deliberate content discovery on Facebook. And that made us very lucky, because Facebook was just launching, had just launched Facebook video in India. And we became one of the first creators to go big just because we indexed more on it. And that partnership held us in very, very good stead. Now we have 7 brands, you know, including Filter Copy, 7 content brands, which includes an animation channel, Jambo. It includes our infotainment channel, Nutshell. It has our talent management arm, Cloud, which we recently announced. Filter Copy remains the bread and butter and the largest marketing channel of how people know us. So people think the name of our company is also Filter Copy. Earlier we used to try to collect people, now we're just like happy with it. It's like, okay, you know, no Pocket Aces, but I think Filter Copy will always remain that biggest marketing channel. We use it also that way. So any new channel that we launched, even when we launched Loco, we used Filter Copy to promote it and grow it. So, yeah.
Right. Which year counts as the early days of this team?
2014 was a very important year.
Okay. That's not too far back.
No. So 2014 was all the film year. And then early 2015 was when we pivoted to digital. And 9th September 2015 was our first video release called Ban Ban on Dice Media, actually. So Dice Media came before Filter Copy. Very few people know that.
Wow. Yeah. That's a testament to the strength of the brand, you know, the fact that you guys are called the co-founders of Filter Copy, which is also probably what I'll be using on the thumbnail. It's just one of those really powerful, you know, YouTube search terms now as well. I have so many questions, because that was a very long description and I enjoyed it. So I have too many questions from especially the early part of this whole journey. On a personal level, what was going on in your lives that y'all had to rush so much? And the second question I have is, why are there 3 co-founders and not 2 or not 4? Like, what did 3 of y'all bring to the table individually?
Okay, this is a loaded question. So I'll try to keep it short. See, I think everything goes back to our upbringing, actually, in many ways, for these 2 questions. So all 3 of us, Ashwin, Anirudh and myself, are born into very middle class, like service oriented families. We actually are the first entrepreneurs in each of our families. No entrepreneurs before that. My family is full of engineers and doctors. Anirudh's family is full of doctors. Ashwin's family is full of airline people, actually, which is a different one. So the reason why we felt that time was of the essence was because, you know, we had Wall Street jobs before moving to India, right? I was working at Goldman Sachs, Ashwin was working at Citigroup, and Anirudh was working at Bank of America. And our parents, that was the dream come true for them. So our parents, who, you know, were first generation people who left India, they went to the Middle East. I grew up in Kuwait. So did Anirudh. So him and I knew each other from 7th standard, by the way. And Ashwin grew up in Dubai, and they ended up being college roommates. So for our parents, us being in the US, working in high-paying finance jobs was like the dream come true, right? All they then wanted is these people buy apartments in Manhattan, have children, and live happily ever after, right? That was basically the dream come true. So when we moved to India, Ashwin and I first moved to India, there was an element of family not being happy at all with the move. In fact, I remember my dad being like, वापस चले जाओ एंड वी हैड क्विट आवर जॉब्स एंड कम एंड लिटरली ही वाज लाइक नहीं इट्स ओके वापस चले जाओ दे विल टेक यू बैक राइट एंड आई वाज लाइक नो पापा दैट्स नॉट द पॉइंट वी हैव कम हियर टू ट्राई समथिंग न्यू यू हैव गिवन अस द फंडामेंटल ऑफ अ रियली गुड एजुकेशन एंड बिकॉज ऑफ विच वी गॉट गुड जॉब्स बट बिकॉज ऑफ दैट वी कैन ऑल्सो टेक रिस्क एंड इफ दिस डजंट वर्क आउट वी कैन ऑलवेज गो बैक So we had promised them that if this doesn't work out within, say, 2 to 3 years, we will, you know, think of something different and maybe go back. That's why time was of the essence, because we needed to also prove to ourselves and to them that this is something that we can pull off, and we were practical about it. If we weren't able to pull off, that's okay. It's great that we tried, you know, but... You know, we would want to do something different. This is what we thought initially. But of course, life doesn't work like that. We fell in love with being here, doing the different things that we came here to do. And it was a long time. We were already in India for about 5 years before our first video released. So we stayed.
What were you doing then?
So we came to India in 2011. Ashwin was working in Reliance and Jungle. And then that film production model was there for a year, and I was working in social development. So I was touring the entire country, going to villages, working with low-income communities, very different from what I did before that or after that. But honestly, it was some of the most fulfilling kind of work, which I did that for about 4.5-5 years. And that's when, you know, we pivoted to digital. So we came and we stayed, because I think with entrepreneurs, you know, what we now realize is what matters most is the staying power, right? You keep trying something. If it doesn't work, you try something else and you try something else. But you're so passionate about the cause that you don't want to leave. And that's why it was important. Now, the time. Now, why 3 of us? So I think being a sole entrepreneur is a lonely journey. Right, and I'm hats off to people who do it, honestly, because I think it's great to have somebody who have the exact same problems as you. You know, you can be so honest to them, you can laugh in front of them, cry in front of them, the hoes and you know, the lows and highs are the same. So when Ashwin initially was in, you know, in the movie business, and it was his thing that I want to start a company of my own, I think he knew he didn't want to do it alone. Now, him and Anirudh had started a bunch of things in college together, including like a cricket team and stuff like that. So literally one day it was like, you know, if I could do it with anyone in the world, it would be so nice to do it with Anirudh. Now, Anirudh was had gone to business school, you know, so he had followed that path. You go to banking and then private equity and then business school. And he was graduating and looking for jobs. He came to India to stay with us to look for a finance job. And that's when we kind of like were like, hey, why don't you do this with us and etc. And so Anirudh, you can always go back to finance. That's what we told him. But ye iska chance kaha milega? Let's try something new. So Anirudh basically joined Ashwin. I was like an additional like advisor on the side, because the office was our house. But I was still continuing with my development job. When we realized that digital requires a lot more people, see, when you're making one movie a year, you don't need that many people, right? But digital, as you rightly said in the beginning of this call, you know, it's every day, you know, every day you are, you know, thinking of what to put out next, and then you want to increase that frequency, etc. That's when I came on board, when we pivoted to digital, basically. And you know, the skill sets, I think we're all kind of a little bit of jack of all trades in terms of our tangible skill sets. Also, we have very similar backgrounds, you know, engineering and then finance. But I think our, you know, like non-tangible skill sets are very different. So where I come from, in that I had, because I had worked in India in social development, and I was actually taking high net worth individual money and targeting it towards social work. So I had the, you know, the sales, India mein sales kaise hota hai, that part I had down. Ashwin was obviously, you know, had the content down. And Anirudh, you know, at the marketing part, kind of, that's how we initially started. So I was looking at sales, Ashwin was looking at content, and Anmol was looking at marketing. And of course, over the period of the last 4-5 years, you know, it's broadly remained this, but also overlapped in various ways. I now also look at a lot of content. Anirudh also looks at Loco now, which is like full tech. It's our new platform, you know, and Ashwin continues to lead the majority part of our content and more things, right? Together we do fundraisers, we do all of these things. So on paper, our resumes look very similar, but I think the soft skills are quite different from each other. Yeah.
Got it. That's an amazing answer. Because usually it's not that way. You know, it's actually the hard skills which are different and then the soft skills which are similar. This is what I've seen across businesses.
Yeah, you know, I think the most important part about having a co-founder is the trust and the respect. These two are like the number one thing. See, you can hire for skill set. Right. You need a CTO, you can hire a CTO. You need somebody who will be the head of content, you can hire for that. Somebody to manage operations, you can hire for that. But the softer aspect of sharing your insecurities with somebody, knowing for the fact that these people are not going to cheat you ever, right? And being able to be really good friends inside and outside. I think that is the most invaluable part of having co-founders. The softer skills are actually the most invaluable. And because of our interesting equation, Anirudh and I know each other independently. Ashwin and Anirudh know each other independently. And then, of course, Ashwin and I are married, so we have an independent equation. That has been really helpful. I think because each pair has their own equation. So in a debate, you'll actually very often see Ashwin and, or maybe Anirudh and I side more together sometimes. It's not always that Ashwin and I are agreeing, or it's actually so fluid and it's beautiful because that's how ideas come around. So the individual equations also matter a lot. If one of us didn't know the third person, then I think it would have been a little bit different, because then you can take sides, etc. But here it's very, very balanced. So yeah.
Yeah, I feel it's, you know how they say that there's matches that are made in heaven, like how marriages are made in heaven. Sometimes there's co-founder relationships that are also made in heaven.
Definitely.
So it's seeming like that right now. So while I do want to ask you about how you guys raised money, why you guys raised money, how you all thought of scaling up, which is also something I feel that most of the content world fails to do. Like, most people fail at the process of scaling up. Anyone can run like one channel, one distribution line, not multiple things. So I'm going to get to all that later. But first, I want to ask you about marriage. Yeah. Like, how is this like affected / not affected your personal relationship with your husband? Because a lot of people, you know, even fear dating someone from the same industry. I've heard a lot of people say that. They say that, oh no, you know, life will get monotonous. I can't imagine what, maybe, you know, at the stage of life you guys are at, it's easier. But I'm really curious to know how marriage comes in to play when you're also a co-founder with your spouse.
Yeah, you know, I'll be honest with you. It is a very, very fine balance that you have to maintain on a daily basis, very, very consciously. See, there are definite pros and cons, right? So again, the pros are the trust factor, the fact that you are aligned, you know, in many ways to each other. You understand each other's stresses. See, entrepreneurship is a stressful journey, right? There are long periods of time where you are scared or you are upset or you are worried. And we understand that so closely for each other because, you know, we work at the same job pretty much. So I think that has been the strongest part of it. The cons are definitely there. So the fact that, and you know, we've also gotten better with it over time. The cons are basically you're not able to switch off. Right, you come home, you know, even on the commute back, you're at home, you know, if you're not very consciously stopping it, you are talking about work. The other con is that sometimes you really like how people are outside of work, but at work they can be very different humans, and you may or may not like that. right? So I do know a lot of people who are very different at work and very different outside work. Here, you have to live with and love that person in both places. It's difficult, right? And the third thing is, you know, that anything that happens at work, does it reflect your personal relationship? And if you have a fight at home, does it show in the office? Right? Practical thing. And so it's not easy. So for all husband-wife teams that are out there, it's not easy and they have to put in the extra effort. Also, you know, when you're fundraising, when you're doing these kind of things, then your people have these kind of questions as well, right? Especially for just couple entrepreneurs. For us, we are three of us, so it gets a little bit medicated. Now, how have we kind of changed over time? See, it also depends on the kind of couple you are. Even when we worked in completely different jobs, Ashwin in film and me in social development, we were the kind of couple who discussed our work a lot. So when we used to come home, we used to discuss our work a lot. So he knew what's going on at my work, who are my colleagues, etc. And we used to always socialize with my colleagues also, his colleagues also. And I used to also hear a lot about his work. So we were anyway the kind of couple. But the thing is, we didn't have a stake in the other person's story. Right. So you're telling me your story. So it's very easy for me to just take your side and make you feel better if I don't have a stake in it. But sometimes I'm only on the other side of your story now. So it becomes complicated, right? Say monetization versus content. You know, the trade-offs that come with this. He's on one side of it and I'm on the other side of it. So there's, we are actually the counterparty to each of our stories as well. So I think that part, gets complicated. A few years ago, we took a call that we will not discuss work outside of work. Right? Which means as soon as we leave the office, when we are in the car, we're just going to stop talking about work. At home, if we need to talk about work, we will slack each other. So this was, we had to put this rule only because, you know, those conversations would just never end. So again, after this rule, things became a lot more, you know, sort of clearer and stuff at home as well. But yeah, I think it's a fine balance. It's not easy, but it's a joy, like spending all day with each other as well. Otherwise, I think the hours we work, we would see each other maybe 2 hours a day. So it's a joy spending time with each other. We consciously are looking at, three of us are looking at very different parts of the business. So we don't get into each other's hair on a daily basis. But yeah, when there's a critical decision to take, then we debate it out. And yeah, and whoever can convince the other people, that's how it works basically. So,
do you think that, like, going forward, you will see, like, is it possible to see more couple entrepreneurs in the world? Because you don't see this very often. So, my hunch is that even you guys are at a much more mature stage of life to be able to handle this and to take that call of, like, I don't want to talk to you about work at home. But is it actually just very unique to you guys?
No, you see, I think already in the last 10 years that we've spent in India, we have seen a lot more couple entrepreneurs, right? And see, you know, there are two types of businesses, say broadly, right? One is this like high growth, venture funded kind of business, right? Where you have these metrics and deadlines, you have to achieve scale, blah, blah. And the other are, for example, lifestyle businesses, where it's like slow and steady. That business, you're actually taking out money. It's funding your own lifestyle. See, we get paid salaries. The profits of the business stay in the business. We get paid a salary. But in a lifestyle business where it's like, you know, say the couple is the founder and then there's a few other employees, that funds their house is also paid for by the this thing. Their car is also paid for. So, us type ke business mein, I think easier hota hai because pressures kam hote hain. And you actually see a lot of very successful such businesses with couples, right? A great example is SIT, right? Mohit and Shavi, right? They're married to each other. You know, they now have launched a couple of more channels as well. So I think it's not unique to us. I think any couple can make it work. Their visions have to be aligned. And they have to be on the same page on some aspects. Look, I can work longer hours than Ashwin and he doesn't care. So that, and similarly, like vice versa. But I feel like a lot of women don't have that kind of support system, right? And, you know, something personal as well. Like, for example, we decided that we don't want to have kids, at least for the time being. And we've been married for 10 years. So the pressures from those families are quite high. I think it's easy for us to make such a decision because we're also working together. Versus if I was doing something else, he was doing something else, maybe it would have been more difficult to make such a decision. So I think that as long as you're supporting each other, you're understanding that, okay, both have ambitions of a certain kind and, you know, both want to grow, and you're leaving space for imperfections because nothing is perfect. As long as that understanding is there, and you can also once in a while burst and have like a full-blown nice fight also, it's healthy. I think it's healthy if you can do all of those things, and then it can work for anyone. There's nothing special that we are doing.
Beautiful. I love how Anirudh is sort of the lifelong third wheel here. It's a fantastic, it's a beautiful.
Yeah, the funny thing is that he's the third wheel, he's a moderator, he's a mediator, he's many things. Also, he's one of the ways in which we met.
Like, I've had individual conversations with you both. I've not spoken to Anirudh that much, but especially you two, I know well now, I feel. Like, at least I have a gauge of who you all are as people. So I get why it works. Both of you are extremely calm, mature, and at the same time, really fast thinkers. So, and I think there's that whole engineering factor also, where that's what engineering does to you generally. Like, you go through that grind from 18 to 22, and your whole mindset kind of switches up for the rest of your life. You see everything as patterns and solutions. So there's something non-engineers fail to understand. Would you actually say engineering, the experience of engineering has been a big factor in you guys kind of traversing through this new filter copy path easily?
You know, so I'll speak for myself personally. I feel that my entire college experience has been a huge factor in that. And things, I did engineering, but at Princeton, which is a liberal arts school. So while I was doing my engineering degree, I did a dance minor, which means that I was taking dance classes every semester for a grade. And this is also theory and practicals. I was taking philosophy, sociology, this, that. So I think that that education really opened my thinking out. And I think the key thing that I learned or took away from my college was that I can do anything that I want to do. So anything that I put my mind to, I can achieve. Of course, with a lot of hard work and discipline, etc. But and yes, the analytical thinking that engineering teaches you, right? That, TK, you have this thing which is broken. How do you fix it? There's a very solution-oriented mindset and a research-oriented mindset on, you know, that if there's no problem that is impossible, you can figure it out. And you break every question to its basics, right? Which is like to its first principles, and try to figure out the answer from that. So I think that helped us, you know, how? Because, see, we were outsiders in this business, even when we came to digital. All these big agencies that are out there. So, of course, you know, people told us, oh, go talk to the agencies. You know, that's how they'll introduce you to brands and et cetera, et cetera. When we went to talk to the agencies, they were all like, oh, who are you guys? Acha, you've done a few videos. Acha, yeah, a few videos have worked very well. Okay, okay. But basically, they dismissed us, right? And I think the outsider part perspective of ours was basically like, okay, this path didn't work. We'll do another path. Or we'll do a third path. So we tried many different ways of making the same thing work. And we went to brands directly. And actually, even today, like over 90% of our business comes directly. And we're not agency dependent at all. Which is, I think, was a very strong kind of ecosystem that we built. So similarly, there were many such problems. Like everybody was doing YouTube first. Because of our research, we did Facebook first. And that was a huge advantage initially. Because on Facebook, we had no competition. So I think the engineering, the exposure to the finance, the being able to speak the language of the CMOs, see, if somebody is spending money with me, I'm able to speak their language of how the budgets work, how they want to see return on investment on the money they're spending with me. So that really helps as well, you know, to convert that business. So from various point of views, I think engineering has helped breaking down the problems, questioning everything, not taking anything for a given, and hence finding our own solutions. And the finance background and the exposure has helped in just, I think, being confident enough that you can understand various people's perspective and convince them that, you know, you can deliver value because you understand what they're looking for.
At what stage did you guys think of raising money, and why did that question even arise? Is it because you had a good vision of where you all wanted to be in 5-6 years? Because I'm asking you this, you know, because like generally the content world doesn't want to play around with the financial world too much. The content world generally is mostly a bunch of kids kind of creating their own videos, creating their own content, and they don't want that added tension of having investor backing, having to answer, you know, older people about their profits or whatever, you know, their performance in the year. So I'm sure that your finance backgrounds had a role to play there, but on a deeper level, as like entrepreneurs, what were you guys thinking? Like, did you all have a certain vision for, I want to be here in 2020, that's why we need to raise money right now? Or like, what was going on?
Whoever said I want to be here in 2020 is definitely not there in 2020. But I understand what you're asking. See, I think it depends a lot on personal ambition, right? What is it that you want to do? So I think it's great to like be a creator who's hugely loved, like you are and so many others are, you know, in our ecosystem. That's also a fantastic, you know, kind of path to pay for yourself. But for us who are less talented folks, who are not like funny inherently or can't act well inherently, for us, automatically we have to look at it as how can we add value? And our value comes from the management front, right? And the business front. So automatic, because we are not individually creators, right? From our DNA. We have built, you know, a creator company and many creator brands, and some of the most important team members are all creators, right? But individually, we are not that. So for us, it was, how can I set up, you know, a media business that can actually create great content for the youth of India? Now, usme apna personal thoda ambition bhi hota hai. So for example, anything that I spend time on doing in the world, I wanted to leave a legacy behind. All right. Which means that after I go, it should be around. And for that, again, you can't rely on an individual self. You have to build a company for that, which can function even when you're not there equally well. Right. So if you look at us, you won't see us coming in our own content, being the face of our own content, because that's not the goal. It's not to individually make ourselves really well known or really big to the public. That would be nice. But our goal is to set up things which last way beyond, you know, our lifetimes. So when you think about it that way, automatically, you know, the path you follow is building a team, right? And then when you think about, okay, you want to entertain the youth, you want to solve their boredom, which is the mission of our company. You can't solve their boredom in only one way, right? Because there is so many different interests that they have. They also like sports. They also like entertainment. They also like shopping. They also like something else. And so, dheere dheere karke, how can you solve various minutes of boredom during their day? That is how we are looking at it. So by definition, you have to build. It's like a Lego block, right? You have to add one block on top of the other. So when you think about it that way, automatically, you know, you are building multiple things. You are working with many people. And for that, you need capital. So if you have personal capital, like if you come from wealth, then you can put your own capital. And honestly, it's great to be your own boss. It's great to not answer to anyone. But I do think being able to answer to external parties brings a certain discipline and governance, right? Discipline, I think everybody understands what I mean by governance is how you run your company. How clean is it? What you do in it? What you allow other people to do? The culture of it, right? That is basically, you know, what, and many other legal, you know, sort of legalities and legal factors come under a good, well-governed company. And that is when a third person is sort of keeping an eye on you. I think you do that really well. So the foundation set is very, very strong. Because imagine you went to a strict school. So obviously, you know, your foundation is strong. And then you can build on it. And, you know, many things you can build on it because your foundation is really strong. So that is the way I would look at it. Also, I think we're trying to change the face of Indian media also in a way. So the ambition is that, right? Tomorrow, why can't we be talked about in the same breath as one of these really large media conglomerates, whether it's a Disney or a Star or a Sony or somebody else, right? We want to be talked in the same breath. We want to be large. We have global aspirations. We want to take Indian stories outside of India. So I think that's the thing. What do you want to build paves the way then of how you build it. And for us, it was like, kuch bada banayenge jo hamare baad bhi chalega. That was the kind of goal.
Yeah, I feel, and correct me if I'm wrong, and I'm honestly asking you this just as a younger entrepreneur probably, because you have experience, you know, with Wall Street as well as this content media entrepreneurship world. Is it fair to say that a lot of content companies or media companies don't scale because of a lack of culture and because of a lack of, that growth mindset? That's what I see, like at least around me with people my age. People don't care about things like company culture that much. Like I saw on your Filter Copy website, on the Pocket Aces website, you guys had one entire section about just culture. This is our culture. This is why you should join us. And I thought that was so fantastic. Like, I'm dead sure that when someone enters your office, they're going to see those same ideals, but in a more practical, like you'll see people acting out the culture.
Exactly.
Yeah, I feel culture is one question I have for you. That does that play a role in scaling up? Because I kind of feel it does from where I stand. And the second is this lack of growth mindset. I feel too many people play extremely safe games in our world and there isn't enough risk-taking ability. I might be wrong, but that's just what I've observed. Yeah. Everyone's very settled.
Yeah, you know, I'll answer the second question first. Again, there is no right or wrong, right? I think it's totally fine to have a risk-taking ability. It's also fine to kind of play it safe. But yes, I do think there are several digital media businesses today that actually can be much larger than they are if there was that growth mindset was there, right? So I think people take it as a given that I cannot compete with these large conglomerates, but you can. And why can you? Because you have some advantages that those don't. A, you are much closer to the actual audience in terms of age, behavior patterns. So you understand the audience much, much better. B, you are much more nimble. You can take decision today and implement it tomorrow. Then day after tomorrow, you can change it as well. Right? It doesn't take you paper pushing of many, many months to get a new thing implemented. Number three, they have grown on the back of cable television. Not a single large incumbent media company today has really figured out social distribution on digital. They have now all launched their OTT platforms, but nobody has figured out the largest distribution, which is social distribution. We all have. That's a huge advantage. Like today, we are reaching 50 million people weekly. Who can claim that? Right? So, because we are growing on the back of these platforms, so I think people always look at the advantages that the large companies have and feel, arey, mere paas itna paisa nahi hai, mere paas itne log nahi hai, mere paas itna brand nahi hai. But they forget about the advantages that they themselves do have that those media companies don't. So I think that yes, there is definitely a a mindset where shuru karne se pehle you have decided ki ye hi mera max hoga. And I do encourage people to challenge many more incumbents. And I mean, look at some of the large creators on YouTube today, whether it's you, whether it's Bhuvan or Ashish Chanchalani or Prajakta Kohli, or I mean, all of you guys are individuals, of course, backed by your own management companies, and you're doing humongously well. There's no reason why you can't do even more, right, with what you're already doing. So 100%, I think that mindset is there. And I think it also depends on a little bit of the training. So who is there to tell you guys these things, right? I think that's where we would actually, personally, I would love to play a role where we can help entrepreneurs figure out how to scale in media beyond one or two channels. Because one or two channels, I think people have done an amazing job, like way beyond, right? But what more can they do is something that would be really nice for us to all brainstorm together. And I'm sure others have some ideas that we can use as well. Because for us also, every day you have to push yourself to think about new things. Innovation is a part of the culture, but it's a very deliberate part of the culture. Bahut easy hota hai settle ho jana in what you already have, right? And we have also had phases, and this is coming to the culture part. Right, we have also had phases in our growth journey where we grew slower than we wanted, and some phases where we grew faster. It's a very deliberate effort, right? That you want to grow, you want to solve boredom, which means you want to take more attention minutes, which means you have to launch more things. People have more interest than just watching one type of content, whether it is web series or whether it is a short video or whether it is different things. Now, gaming has been a hugely different foray for us. We had to learn everything from scratch. We knew nothing about gaming. But we thought ki this is the right time. To kisi ko to karna hai, to hum to, why can't we do it? That was the thought process. The culture, there are many aspects to it, Ranveer. See, I think number one, you have to listen to what younger people in your team have to say. Look, I am 36. I am getting every year farther and farther away from the audience, the core audience, which is younger, than any new person who joins my company today, correct? I have to listen to what they have to say about which new platforms are cool now, what audiences are watching, how behaviors are changing. So I think that's a strong part of our culture. There's actually no hierarchy when it comes to debates and decision making, and everybody is deliberately asked to be intellectually very humble. So I will never say to you ki ha ye to maine pehle try kiya hai ya tum kya samjhoge tum to abhi chote ho. Never. Those kind of things can never be said at Pocket Aces, because you might know much better than me because you're younger than me, right? At least about a few things. Secondly, I think the one thing that happens in every media company, which I think is the biggest downfall to scale, is the hierarchy of not just senior junior, but who is more important. Sabse important actors, uske baad director, uske baad writer, uske baad camera ke piche jo aate hain, uske baad baki sab. Right. That's not the case at all, especially in digital. And at Pocket Aces, to not at all. So whether you are the biggest face of our channel or you are a finance guy in our finance team, if you guys are at the same level of designation, you get paid the same. You get treated the same way. There is no hi sir, hi ma'am, arre wow, fanboying, fangirling in our company at all. And I think this is a huge factor for success of thinkers who can come up the curve without feeling ki arre, I'm not one of the more important people in this company, because everybody is treated the exact same way. And I know many, many companies that have this culture, and that's the big downfall. So people leave those companies and come to us. Ki wahan jab town hall hota hai, toh hume piche bithate hain. Matlab, that's just beyond anything that we have ever thought of. Ki matlab, ki is logon ko piche kyun bithayenge yaar? Jo eager hai, usko sabse aage bithao. Right? And because of that, we have grown managers. See, creators in general in this world are fewer. Regular people can learn normal skill and become good managers. when you have good managers, those managers can manage new channels, they can manage growth, they can think about new ideas, and they can provide path for creators as well. So this is why culture and innovation is so important. So I'll give you an example. We've recently set up something called the Audience Insights Committee. We felt that as we were growing, and the company was also growing, now we are 235 people, that we were moving away a little bit from our talking to our audiences directly, answering those comments, engaging in that banter, which we used to do much more when we were smaller. So we've set up this committee where we are actually picking up the phone and talking to audiences directly. And there's a team of 8 people, is a special task force type of committee. And so we ran it as a application process. People were very excited to do it in addition to their regular, you know, work. And we've talked to now hundreds of people directly on the phone, and the quality of insights are just different level. What people are watching, how are they spending their time, what do they like, not like. And we didn't only ask questions about Pocket Aces in our content. We're just asking them about their likes and dislikes in general. And that feeds into what more we'll create, what new channels we'll launch, which new platforms we'll launch on. So I think it's very important. Now, this was a new thing we had never done before in our history. It's important to keep doing these new things, right? And realigning your mission to the real clients you're serving, which is your audience. Once they are happy, everybody will come, paisa will come to you as well.
Yeah, you know, because you guys work with so many young people also, and I know that because I don't know whether it was at a conference or at one of these panels we've been on, but you had mentioned how, I think it was Ashwin actually, someone had asked him, how do you keep content relevant? And he's like, the solution is you keep hiring younger and younger talent. By that, he means every year there's going to be new 22-year-olds who will be even closer to your target audience.
Exactly.
So that's the actual key. But I'm sure that 6 years in, you've also seen a pattern of how 22-year-olds are evolving. So from where you stand, and also, again, in the field of content, you get a top view of things. You understand how audiences' minds are changing.
Yeah.
So what would you say about the youngsters of today, like the 22-year-olds, 21-year-olds of today? And what would you say about how content is evolving in the YouTube/social media game?
So the youngsters of today are very different from when, you know, we were like 22-year-olds. So we were taught, you know, keep your head down, do the work you've been told to do, learn in the process, right? I think the youngsters of today they think about their purpose in life much earlier than, you know, we used to think about our purpose in life. So I think when they arrive in their first job, they already know what they are passionate about. They already know what they want to, you know, do in life very often. It might change actually, and it might not be so formalized, but they have a much better idea. And I think they also are much more close to taking shit from people. All right. So I think goods and bads. So the goods of this are you get people with a lot more clarity. Who have opinions, who will not think even a second to, you know, say something back to you and say, I don't agree with you, which is a good thing. On the cons, I think they do get bored very quickly. They do get impatient. There is a culture of wanting quicker gratification. You know, I've been working so hard for the last 6 months, but it's only been 6 months, right? So there is a want for, you know, quicker gratification. So I think that the way to work very, very closely and in perfect harmony with every batch of 22-year-olds is that you evolve a little bit and you train them a little bit. You also have to evolve. You also have to change your mindsets to what is now okay in the company, how they dress, what time they roll in, how many smoke breaks they take, like blah, blah, all of it. You also have to, as a company, evolve. right? And decide like what's okay with you, what's not okay with you. And the training part is very important, where you also have to tell them that, look, these 10 things according to you, these last two things according to how the company works. Be patient. You will get your due. See, the good thing about our sector is a young person can come and join a company and then release a video like 1 month later, right? They can actually do that. So keep showing them that their voice matters, their opinion is taken into account, and they will get their due. And that's it. Year on year, you have to make sure you keep them engaged, which also keeps you innovating. Because if I don't want to lose my batch of 22-year-olds, I have to give them something interesting to do next year. So by definition, you evolve and grow as a company. So I think that's what I would say. These are the pros and cons, and definitely you also need some of your managers to be okay with this, because you know you find a lot of people complaining about millennials, right? But hey, they're the future, so we also have to evolve, right? So that's the way I would look at that. Yeah. Sorry, you had another part of your question which I missed.
The other question was, how is content evolving? Because again, you're speaking to that same audience that you're hiring.
Yeah, you know this, it's becoming super UGC oriented, right? Audiences are now creators, right? Yeah. They have a very
What is UGC orient? Like, could you explain it for the listeners?
Yeah, so basically, user generated content, right? Oriented, which means your, short video platforms of the world, whether it's TikTok and several other similar apps, people are not shy anymore. India used to be a shy, camera-shy country. Mimicries used to happen behind closed doors in front of the bathroom mirror, right? Now it's very, very different. Even in tier 2, tier 3 cities, people have the confidence of turning on their cameras and dancing to it or mimicking to it and putting it out for the world to see. I think social media is giving people social gratification. You are able to build a persona online that may not be your real life persona. So you are able to live your dream kind of little bit with open eyes, right? I want to become famous. It's easier to become famous now, at least in your like sort of local ecosystem. It's easier to showcase your talents. It's easier to make money doing that. So I think content is totally evolving towards democratization. So while the highly produced big budget shows that we make and other people make, then the mid budget shows that we make, and then the small budget short videos that we make, the produced content, it will of course remain. But more and more, you're going to see volumes of consumption happening on user generated content, just because it's limitless. There's no limit, right, to user-generated content. So I think that is one big evolution that you're seeing in people's behaviors as well as content platforms. The other big thing that will come is, slowly it will come, but surely, like tech in content, right, whether it's virtual reality or augmented reality and stuff like that. I know these words are like very overused, but, if I can watch a show where I can replace the actress's face with my own, that's going to give me a lot of pleasure to watch, right? And so that kind of stuff will start. Real watch parties. See, that tech is not really working right now. If together we want to watch something remotely, it's very, very mediocre tech. That's going to evolve. So I think this whole remote working around the world, you can watch with anyone, friends and family, that will evolve. Even on gaming, it's all about the streamers. Right. Streamers are nothing but regular people who play well and you don't want to show off their skills. So if I had to say number one content trend, it's user generated content.
Where will Pocket Aces be in 10 years? While I know that I'm 100% sure y'all aren't planning that far ahead, because y'all play that Lego block game where you'll only think of your next step. But what's your hunch right now? If I just throw that question at you, what would you like to see in like 2030?
See, I would just like to see us being talked among people who changed the landscape of how people were consuming content in India and maybe around the world as well. They changed what people were consuming, how people were consuming, how they were creating. So yeah, I would just like, I think we would like to see Pocket Aces amongst the large media conglomerates globally, having power, you know, created a path for young creators to start from scratch, then, you know, create various types of content and then create, you know, large shows or movies or whatever. That's definitely for creators and their path. That is also something we are very, very cognizant of. So that's why creators, we don't want creators to leave, right? Because you want them to also, you want to give them also better and better opportunities, and for the audiences as well. And yeah, we'd like to be one of those people who people are, like audiences are spending a lot of time consuming Pocket Aces or related content. So solving boredom and creating the, making a dent in the content ecosystem globally. These are, you know, these would be the two things.
Got it. I'm going to change gears up completely and make it about me or people like myself. Yeah. I mean, like, you know, because you guys have scaled up a content company so much, the obvious game that individual creators need to be playing is that game of scale. You spoke about it earlier in the podcast where you said that, you know, why not have more channels than that? Honestly, even the individual creators... life has a lot of cons that aren't spoken about enough on the internet. And I'm not talking about the hate or the mental health issues. Yeah. But I think one massive con is time. Because we're supposed to give our face and our physical bodies so much to the camera. Like, there's so many business ideas I have which I know are sure shot successes. Because I've understood business by this point of my life. And I really want to execute on those. But it's just not... I don't have the time for it. And probably I've not found my... You know, I have found amazing hires, but I've not found that one team member, that one co-founder who will help me create what I wish to create. The other co-founders are doing an incredible job. That's why they are co-founders and they're running their own things. But there's even more ideas. And because you're a content creator, you're putting out so much content, you get a bird's eye view of what the audience needs. So you know what you're supposed to build next, but because I'm giving 80% of my time to podcasts and camera work, it doesn't give you much time for thinking about raising money, thinking about scaling at that level, which I'm actually trying to fix over the next 1 or 2 years. I'm bringing in people in my team who'll do exactly that, who'll be a Xerox copy of myself to be able to scale up things even better. But the question I have for you is, like, how do you see this individual creator ecosystem? Because if, you know, the West is to be followed, which is usually what happens in India. Like, whatever happens in America or Europe ends up happening in India, traditionally. I hope we change that.
It's changing, but to a lot the of Western, now, though.
Yeah, I mean, I hope that change becomes even stronger.
Yeah.
But do you think, I mean, we see a lot of Western creators fading away over time. People either get bored, they are done with it after a point, they've made enough money and they're like, okay, cool, I don't want any of that stuff, that brutality anymore. When we go for all these international forums, you'll hear a lot of international creators say things like, oh yeah, I took a 2-year break because I was just done with it. Or, you know, it does get mentally taxing for one person, especially when all the stakes are dependent on you as, like, one individual human.
Absolutely.
So for me personally, meditation helps a lot deal with all that, but I've seen people go through a lot of shit because of that individual pressure. So my question to you is, what's your whole viewpoint on this whole individual creator life, and what's their best case scenario? Like, where will the top creators be in 10-15 years?
See, it's difficult for me to answer where will the top creators be in 10-15 years, of course, because it depends on so many factors, and, you know, I can't claim to understand, you know, all of those factors very well. But What I will share is, like, my ideas on, like, two ways in which you can do the kind of scale work that you want to do, right? One way is, see, and there's a lot of advantage of being an individual creator, right? So, for example, remember we showed up at Whistling Woods for that panel. Everybody knew who you were and nobody knows my face, right? So there's a huge advantage to being the face. How do you use that advantage is basically what you have to figure out, right? Whether it is to raise money or to start more things, etc., etc. So there are 2-3 different ways. See, one, if you really love what you're currently doing and that channel that you're currently running, but you have more entrepreneurial ideas, I think it's actually not very hard to find entrepreneurs for those ideas and fund them a little bit along with the idea itself, right? So for example, say you put your idea, you know, the other day we were also discussing one of the ideas that you had, right? So say you put your idea down on paper, right? And then you figure out, because you have the experience, how much little bit of seed money will it take to kick this off, etc. You find somebody to do that for you, right? In that manner, see, you're also new to it, even though it's your concept. That person is also new to it, but you have chosen that person. So you definitely have the ability of getting somebody who you think will be really good. And you are advising them as well. So you're not gone anywhere. And you also own a large part of, say, a new company that you set up, right? Or a new initiative that you launch, by definition. And that person is higher than they also own some part of it. A lot of entrepreneurs I know are doing things like that, where they came up with the idea, they are getting another person to actually become the executive founder. They are like the non-executive founder who is not day-to-day working on that. They are like an advisor, they are like a chairman, whatever you might want to call them. And they are guiding on how this should be done. So that way you actually build your set of companies as well, but you might not be spending like all your time in that company. You want to continue maybe doing your work because your work gives value to your face, which then helps you do things which other people might not be able to do, like raise money, like do X, Y, Z. There are many huge advantages to being a known face, right? That's one way to do it. Now, another way to do it is for creators who now feel, okay, bohat abhi similar type of content bana liya. Now I want to do something different. You could also kind of pivot your own channel into like slowly evolving into different kind of content. That's one. You could start adding faces to your own videos, right? Suppose, and actually at Filtercopy, we use this tool often because, see, after an actor has been in short videos for a while, then they kind of want to like do other things as well, even though they know short video is a great marketing tool for them. But they also want to do other things. So for example, with one old, very well-loved face, we will add 2-3 new faces. Whether it's a male or a female, that doesn't matter. And because this video will do well because of this face will also start working and being loved by the audience. Then you slowly take this face out and this face becomes bigger. Then you launch a third face on the back of the second face. Then you launch a fourth, then you launch a fifth. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So for example, own channel, if you started introducing, say, more faces who were co-delivering the content with you, and they also start, see, you know what your audience likes. So it's possible for you to find another face that your audience likes. And then slowly, if it's okay, if it's a few videos that Ranveer is not there, but this other person is there that we also love as the audience. So that's another way to do it, and that frees up your bandwidth to then start something else and then start something else. But again, I would recommend never vacate something that you're very, very good at. Don't vacate it. You can get, you can take time away from it and also never lose the relevance of your face. It's a very strong thing.
Yeah, 100%.
Even in our content, people remember who were the actors. You know, of course they remember which was the channel, but they don't remember anything else, honestly. So the face is, that's just how the world works. So these are two ways in which it's, both are very tangible. Both, first one has been done by many entrepreneurs. Because even if I'm running a regular business, but I have another idea, how do I do it? I can angel fund a small, another entrepreneur who is completely in my guidance to launch it.
Got it. While this is a brutal question to ask, I'm still going to ask it. Like, do you see any mistakes done by individual creators or, you know, just individual brands that are being built out on social media? Like that one actor / influencer / YouTuber, what are the mistakes done by these people? Because I'm sure that you guys have, I mean, we're all kind of on that same grassland, you know, of content. So you do understand, okay, that giraffe is playing wrong or that zebra is playing wrong. So what would you like say are the mistakes of individual creators?
See, I wouldn't say that there are any mistakes because honestly, and I'm not being diplomatic, we are very early in the ecosystem still, right? And there are several individual creators who are very, very large. So keeping those aside, the other batch that are somewhere in the middle, I think not a mistake, but my only advice to them would be like, you know, find your own voice. Because you do see a lot of, and I think Ranveer, honestly, you have done an amazing job with that. Your content is not like any other individual creator on in the Indian ecosystem, right? It's very, very different. You found your niche, you found your strength. People look up to you for like life lessons. That's a different type of looking up, right? Similarly, I would say creators that are growing, find your strength and your niche. Sketch comedy is great, but is that, you know, something that, you know, you want to do when everybody is doing it? You can do something else also. And what is that? So that's basically what I would, the only advice. Honestly, I think it's too early to tell mistakes. grow your team. Don't just rely on yourself. It's very easy to burn out. I know it's a very hard job. And it's how will ideas come, right? Innovation kaise hoga if there are only like 2-3 people just talking about the same stuff. Innovate, grow your teams, get a business understanding. I think a lot of individual creators don't understand business. They either rely on their managers or they rely on friends or they actually don't monetize how much they can monetize. I would say get a business understanding, get a business partner. Don't think business is the lower part of the job. It's not, bro. It like feeds your ass. It keeps the lights on. It improves your lifestyle. So I do think individual creators can monetize much, much better than they currently are. And think big. I know some creators have launched like merchandise and their own lines and all. There's a lot bigger you can go. I know there are some creators that are going to LA. They are collaborating with international talent. There is so much to be done. Get advice. And you know, the same people you got advice from when you were starting out might, of course, those are your best friends and those are your closest buddies. But try to get advice from different types of people because maybe somebody will give you an idea you had not thought about. So 100%. Basically, and all in all, straight to true to what you want to do in life. Not everybody wants to grow in the same way. So stay true to whatever, you know, how you want to live your life.
So ma'am, coming back to Pocket Aces now, at this stage, you're kind of the blueprint for a lot of, you know, these content houses. Like people will look at you and say, okay, I want to go down that path. So what are like a couple of things you all have done correct in scale? In the process of scaling according to yourself, like what would you look back and say, okay, these two things or three things were the best decisions for the overall journey? And I obviously want to ask you about your challenges at this stage.
Yeah. Sure. So I think number one would be very basic. When we started our digital journey, we didn't just blindly align with one platform that everybody was aligning with. We did our research, we aligned with Facebook. That really helped us because suddenly we were different from the other people and more people then came to know about us. So I think that was decision number one. I think decision number two, we've hired a lot of people who have come from various walks of life, right? Not people who are who have come only from a media background, etc. And I think, plus we have of course hired people from the media background. So I think the kind of team we have and the diversity of ideas is just amazing. And the culture we've set up to hear out those ideas, taki waise dabe nahi reh jate. Definitely the second is the people and the diversity of people. The third one, I think is like launching our own app for gaming. I think it was the right time. You know, we've also evolved. It was quizzing, then it was hyper casual, and then we added streaming and esports. It's a huge market, and a lot of people told us this is very different from what you guys do, etc., etc. But we felt that it's another kind of content, and it's very powerful because gaming is a very repeatable kind of content. Say even our best web series, or say Friends, right? The globally like best series everybody likes to watch again and again. I'm a huge fan. I've watched maybe all 10 seasons, maybe 10 times. But if I like a game, I play it thousands of times. So when it comes to repeatability of content and hence solving boredom, gaming is an amazing genre. So I think that was like a great third decision.
Got it. And what are your challenges at this stage? Just the overall
organization. Lots of challenges. Har stage pe hote hain. Number one challenge is how do we grow our new channels? So that includes our animation channel, Jambo, our infotainment channel, Nutshell, as well as the gaming app, Loco, right? How do we grow it further, more and more? I think the number two challenge is how do we grow our OTT presence, right? Because that is something we definitely are doing currently. And it's not easy because, you know, it goes back, it's reminiscent of the film business in many ways, where there are a few buyers and a few decision makers. See, luckily for us, we got success very early on in the OTT life cycle with Little Things, right? So, and because we're well known in the ecosystem, we have the relationships. But everybody wants crime and, gore and stuff like that. So staying true to what you believe is your kind of content and still making large-scale show for OTTs, that's something that we are currently doing. And, you know, it's an uphill battle. A good one at that. I think the individual execs love that content, but they're always scared because it's like, okay, there's something new for the subscriber audience. Subscribers, you know, think that they should pay for very expensive shows, etc. So, ekdam YouTube se alag hona chahiye. So, there are some of these preconceived notions. What, as time comes, you know, that will also evolve. And I think, you know, this COVID has been a challenge, right? That I think is for all of us, all creators. We couldn't shoot any series since March all the way to September. That's definitely taken a hit, not just on the business, but also on the slate, people's motivations, etc. So I think the challenge is that in ups and downs of the world, how do you keep marching forward? How do you keep your head up? How do you keep 230 people motivated? And how do you stay true to your audiences? And not have these pressures ki, are, now everything is coming back, toh main kuch bhi bana dun. You know, staying true to your audiences. I think there's one other challenge that I would like to add, which is not just for us, but in general in the content ecosystem on scale. See, all of us have to figure out, there is only that much content that we can physically create, correct? So for us, we hire more people, we can create more content. So it's like a linear growth. What do you do to get exponential growth? How do you use what you've built to grow faster than those 3 videos a week? That is something that we are thinking about very, very closely. And we have some cool ideas. So I think in a few months, if we talk, you'll see we've launched some new initiatives, which is how can we scale beyond just scaling content?
Right.
Yeah.
What do you think are the, that's a very interesting point. In fact, that's something I've been thinking about for the podcast a lot. I just want to bring in a few nuggets about podcasting here. So I feel that while there is a massive podcasting wave that's going to hit the country, currently the supply is much more than the demand. I see the numbers we do on our audio streaming platforms and it's not that great right now. But we're still the number one podcast in the country. And the number one podcast in the country is like thinking like this. So I'm very hopeful about the future for sure. India's a very voice-oriented country, audio-oriented country. But there isn't that much space for that many players. And this is not... I'm a very optimistic person. I'm just giving you the ground reality of what's happening in that space. Yeah. The game with podcasting is much more than just creating audio content. You can't just sit and talk about random things. There has to be a certain flow in the conversation. There's an art of podcasting. You either get entrepreneurs or you make your guests comfortable. That's the other aspect of it. And, you know, I mean, there's just too many dynamics that people take for granted. So I always ask myself that question, how do I get more people to not listen to the podcast, because I know it's not everyone's cup of tea, but at least know about the podcast and make a stronger podcasting brand.
Yeah.
And the solution I had is, wow, okay, now because I've used my own cameras and equipment for this, I have access to all this raw material. It's about what I can repurpose that raw material for. So we're experimenting now with the short content. We're experimenting now with highly edited videos. And that's my hunch for the way forward. And I feel like I'm a seasoned content creator. So I kind of know what will work. Like, I have that little bit of that instinct. But my point of saying all this is, you need a think tank within your team, which can't only be you. And I'm at that stage of hiring right now from a content perspective, that I need few kids now, the 22-year-olds, to think of how we can repurpose, what we can use it for. Now, obviously, there's this whole dynamic you have while hiring. You want to ensure they're similar culturally to you. They're motivated and all that. I'd like for you to break down, like, what your learnings are about this whole scaling up process. How do you scale through other people's minds? Like, what have you learned about it?
Make them a part of the brainstorm. And make them believe they own certain ideas from the brainstorm. I think if people feel like owners, they go above and beyond in actually putting the hard work, in implementing. And of course, you have to put a discipline around the whole thing, right? So it can't just be like, chalo, ek brainstorm le aate hain. So for example, design thinking is a vehicle to do brainstorming, getting empathy exercises with whichever client or audience you want to serve, then brainstorming, then focusing, and then implementing. So I would recommend following, and it's a very, very well-known, well-practiced tool. Design thinking is a great way to involve other people in brainstorming and then feeling like they own the idea. And then, of course, implementing is the next step. So I would say go with one of these type of things. Ranveer, I would also say, like, yeah, it's a random idea. You have not asked me for it, but like, we talked about UGC, right? What about UGC podcasts? If you had to think about how you can scale podcasts beyond 24 hours that you as Ranveer have, right? How about you ask the same questions and hundreds of people answered? How would that work? Suddenly, scale looks very different, right? And suddenly, it looks, you can reach different types of people, because you're not investing. See, for you to invest 2-3 hours of your life to first record, interview, then edit, blah, 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 it takes a long time. So you then have to find only a few people who you really want to interview. But somehow, if it took only half an hour of your time per podcast you created and you were still happy with that quality of the podcast, you'd suddenly think very differently about the type of people. Then you can interview anyone or many different people. Also, so I would actually encourage you to think on that front. Ki you are creating a revolution. Revolution create karne ke liye, mass is important. Right? Yep. There's a critical mass and then there's a mass above that. Also, the kind of podcasts that you do are like really amazing and they are meant for a certain type of audience. What if you had to massify it? So, shayad hum Hindi mein baat kar rahe hote. Hai na?
Yeah.
So,
which is going to be our next episode, okay. Maybe 3 months later.
Okay. Haan. So, basically, that's what I'm saying. Ek thoda pivot alag karke, lot of different ideas can come. Okay, how many people do you reach weekly on your channel on YouTube? Approximately.
We do like 7-8 million views a month. So divided by 4, say 2 million.
I think it'll be a lot more than that, because your reach would be a lot more than that. Say 2 million people. Yeah. What else can you do with those 2 million people? Right now, you're showing them a few videos a week. But you have their attention. They look up to you. और क्या कर सकते हो उन्हीं 2 मिलियन लोगों के साथ? ऐसे सोचने लगोगे ना तो बैरियर्स हट जाते हैं. देन इट्स नॉट अबाउट दिस चैनल, दिस पॉडकास्ट, दिस ह्यूमन. देन इट इज योर बैरियर्स स्टार्ट टू गो अवे अ लिटिल. एंड दैट्स हाउ यू शुड डू द ब्रेनस्टॉर्मिंग एक्सरसाइजेस. कॉस्ट नो बैरियर, बैंडविड्थ नो बैरियर, कुछ भी हो सकता है उसमें. तब आप क्या करते, राइट? इफ यू कुड डू द सन एंड द मून, if you could take these 2 million people to Mars, like, would you do that or would you do something else? So I think there are ways in which you can run these brainstorms to remove blocks from our own heads as well.
I mean, and you know, I know it's a very not, usually I ask people their 3 life lessons, but since we're ending this podcast speaking about design thinking, could you kind of give a summary of what design thinking is? Because my consensus, both from the outside and after speaking with you, is that it's been a massive part of how y'all have fueled growth on FilterCopy. And it's also something that's not taught in Indian schools. So could you explain it, you know, just from a very practical perspective, and also maybe suggest people some books or some sources of knowledge that they can turn to, or movies that they can turn to for inspiration / useful tools?
Yeah, for sure. See, so design thinking, we also kind of consciously implemented it only a couple of years ago. And how we actually got very conscious about it, because we were part of this Stanford program. Pocket Aces were a part of the Stanford program called the Seed Transformation Program. It's a brilliant program for young companies that are looking to scale, right? And it touches upon all aspects about how you should plan for your transformation, right? And scale, basically. So design thinking is basically a tool to help you come up with new ideas to do new things. It has 4 main steps. Step 1 is empathy, where you learn about the clients or the audiences of whoever who you're creating this product for. Step 2 is flair, right? Flair means go crazy. No judgment, no discussion, any idea works once you've basically understood the problems of your clients that you're looking to solve. You frame a statement around which, a problem statement around which you want to brainstorm, right? So for example, how might we provide more entertainment to the 2 million people who follow Ranveer's channel? Simple question. And then becomes a flair exercise where you just go and you brainstorm. Any idea works, okay? Anything from let's open a gym to like let's take them to Mars. Anything works, right? No judgment. And you do this with a group of people. Then the next step is you start putting some constraints. Okay, keep this idea to planet Earth. That could be one constraint. You could say, hey, keep this idea under $100, right? Keep this idea implementable by a team of 4 people, right? Then you start putting constraints, basically. And that's how you start narrowing down some of those ideas. And then you reach maybe set of top 5 or 10 ideas that you then talk about as a team and try to pilot maybe 3 of them, right? And people from within that exercise become the owner of those pilots and basically take it forward. So it makes people feel that you are big participants in the journey of the creation of this product, and hence they have different ownership, they act very differently and different passion. Now, you can go to Stanford's D-Lab website, which is their design lab website online, and you can actually run a design thinking exercise in your company tomorrow, because they have the free tools of how to do it. And they start with something simple, like let's design a gift, right, to give to somebody. You know, just to get you to know what is a design thinking exercise and sort of then take it forward. So there are many such sources, you know, on the Stanford D-Lab website that I would recommend as directly implementable stuff.
Yeah, I think this is the kind of stuff that actually helped initially Filter Copy Breakout and generally Pocket Aces Breakout, that y'all have brought that Western flair to an Indian product, which is, you know, what people say about, oh, okay, you should go to USA to study and then maybe later if you want to do a business, you can bring back your learnings from there. That's not what everyone does, but I feel like that's what you guys have done.
The Stanford program, yeah, we only did two years ago.
Got it.
Right?
Got
so
it,
we,
got
keep,
it, got it.
We keep yeah. constantly upgrading ourselves as well, which is very important as entrepreneurs.
Okay. And ma'am, the final question for you is, because this is a women's entrepreneurship sort of series we started on the podcast, the girls who joined Monk Entertainment and Beer Biceps were the ones who were the real, like, game changers for us. Like, I remember specifically, you know, the kind of inputs they gave, which just changed stuff up completely. So what does that feminine energy add to the whole entrepreneurial game, according to you? Because I know that even Anirudh and Ashwin would have thought of something when they said, okay, you know, Aditi should be brought on as a co-founder. So, like, what do you think?
See, it adds diversity. Right. Honestly, that itself is the biggest thing. So I would never even say that, oh, it should be an all-woman team or anything like that. Because I think what you require in a workplace and to come up with different perspectives and ideas is diversity. So diversity of gender, diversity of economic backgrounds, diversity of exposure, diversity of POVs, right? You need that. So I think number one, women just add diversity, because unfortunately most workplaces by default are much more male skewed. That's number one. I think number two, they definitely add a different way to lead and work, right? I'm not saying it's better or it's worse. It's different. And I think that's what matters, because I think they're nurturing, the way they nurture is different. Right. So one of my most favorite things to do is to help young people figure out how to grow, right? Their career paths, their interest levels, their skill sets. I love doing that. I love spending time with young people to help figure out, okay, what's next for you at our company or somewhere else as well. So I think they do add a different type of nurturing. They do add different moral codes, right? Moral compasses are different between men and women. I am much more sensitive towards certain type of jokes or certain types of, you know, remarks or certain types of content. So the filter is there much earlier, right? And hence, we never give a chance usually for somebody else to tell us that, hey, this was questionable or there was something off with this. Because we have enough diversity of opinion internally that people will raise their hand and they're not afraid to speak. So it has to go hand in hand with culture. There are a lot of people that employ women in certain type of roles and those women can't say anything, right? So it has to go hand in hand with culture. Hamare yahi itne diverse viewpoints hain ki everything goes through a stress test internally before it goes out. So obviously the problems are problematically, it's different. I think women in leadership positions add a lot. I'll tell you two, three things. A, different management styles, diversity. B, it shows young women in your company that there is growth, that there is hope, that there is a future, and it makes them more confident. So they become better at their jobs. They become better at speaking up. They become better at pointing out a mistake if they're seeing it happening, or pointing out something bad if they're seeing it happening. So if you have more women on top, we are about 50% women in leadership positions and about 40% women overall in the company. And those leadership position women have a lot to do with how confident the younger girls are. So I think this is what women add. I wouldn't stereotype as to say, are women are very empathetic, men are don't. Aisa nahi hai. I think that's very individualistic. So you do need all sorts of people in terms of diversity. Of course, your basic cultural and ethical value system should be similar.
Got it. Aditi Srivastava from Pocket Aces. Thank you, ma'am. This is one of those conversations I've wanted to have for years now. You were one of my early guests I wanted on the show. I don't know why it's been delayed till so long. We're almost at the end of the lockdown. But I really, really appreciate it. I appreciate you sharing your knowledge, your learning so openly. That's the sign of a true entrepreneur. You're all about sharing. You're all about elevating yourself and like the people around you. So just really thank you. I really appreciate this.
Thank you so much. I've been waiting to do this for a while and I'm so glad it's finally happened. And full respect to everything you do, Ranveer, because I can, even your like motivational quotes on Instagram is something that I keep like reposting and stuff, because I truly think that you are changing mindsets of young men in this country and improving those mindsets, which I think is a national service. So I'm not joking. I do think that young men and their mindsets could use a lot more direction, and you're one of the people providing that at scale. So much more than just being in the content and entertainment business, I think you're doing a service to the world and the nation and to men themselves. So.
Thank you, ma'am. That's the goal. I feel like I didn't have a lot of guidance. I didn't have too many mentors early on in life. So I keep trying to, put that out for the world through people like yourself, for sure. I feel, again, like coming back to Pocket Aces, because of the rapidity of your journey, there's been too many learnings. So, and I'm sure if I have the same conversation with Ashwin and Aniru, they're going to say like completely different things. Which is also on the cards, definitely. no, ma'am, but thank you. And I'm waiting for this lockdown to get done so I can actually sit and probably be in the same room with you and jam at some point.
It'll be fun to meet. It's been a while.
For sure. But for now, ma'am, thank you. I genuinely really appreciate this. I've always spoken really highly of FilterCopy wherever I've gone for a reason, because I've seen, you know, just how everyone is. So you guys are doing some crazy work and you're like kind of the flag bearers for the rest of us. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Anveer. Really, really had fun doing this.